to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening, and welcome to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital here this evening, again, with Mac Burns.
Celebrating 40 years.
Yes, Providence Seaside Hospital hit a milestone in July. 40 years.
In July. Okay, see, I was about to say, and we didn't even talk about this when we talked about Providence history.
I know.
Twice.
I can't believe I missed the math on it.
So you didn't miss it. It's July.
It is. That's true.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. We're going to celebrate with cake and party and blessings, of course.
Sweet.
But haven't got it all planned out just quite yet.
Will it be healthy cake?
Because
you guys are all about health, so. But you can have a snack as long as you
good for the soul,
do
yes.
some exercise or,
exactly.
or be active some way.
Moderation.
Moderation.
Yes.
You can have a cookie. You just can't have a million cookies.
Well, you can, but not quite as good for you.
So this is hodgepodge time.
It is.
The show is going to be all over the place because there's so many things that have happened, are going on, and are coming up.
And we haven't been left to ourselves for quite a while.
That's right.
So are you guys, everyone ready at home?
More or less.
Okay.
We hope. They're not
buckle
turning.
Up.
They're not.
Here we go.
They're not. Buckle up. Put your hats on. Hold on to your hats. So we actually have a plug. The Flavel House Gardens.
Yes. Oh, I love them.
Pam Holin was walking her dog, and she's a master gardener. And she's involved in a lot of things.
Yes.
And she said, oh my gosh, the grounds aren't as beautiful as they could be. So she has organized and spearheaded a group. And there's a lot of other people that have come already to the cause. But she was the one that called me.
Yes.
So she's the one getting a shout out.
Sure.
Today. But Jane Donnelly and some others. But anyway, she's organizing a group to try and clean up the grounds a little bit.
How fun.
And that's been part of the problem. Not just that we don't have tons of volunteers that want to work on the grounds up to this point. We also... We're historians.
Mm-hmm.
We're preservation people. We're curators. We don't know what we should weed and what we should plant and what we should take out. So starting Monday evening, July 19th, from 5 to 7, just 2 hours, or Wednesday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon. If you want to come and help, there'll be some experts there to help. You can bring tools. We'll have some tools, but it's a multi-pronged effort. We're going to weed, and then we're going to do some mulching, and then we're going to do some replanting, some moving of plants, some plantings, and it's going to hopefully go on from now until next spring.
Oh, how nice. And skills of all levels.
All
right?
Levels. So idiots like me, they can take direction.
To
yes.
Yeah,
tell me what to weed. I can pull the weed out as well as anybody. I just don't know what I should be yanking out of the ground.
And are you going to try and learn the classifications there any focus there?
Because at least two of the people involved are master gardeners. Part of their mission, master gardeners, is educational.
Perfect.
So there will be some educational components, but it's really about making the grounds look beautiful.
Nice. So. And it got hot here about a month ago.
Yeah, I was not here for that.
Did your plants fare okay? I mean, they are pretty exposed there.
Yeah, I mean, there's not... More knowledgeable people would be able to answer that better than I. I mean, we don't have a whole bunch of dead stuff.
That's great. Good.
But it's also not lush and green and overflowing with the things it should be overflowing with.
Hence the work party.
Yeah. So any Monday night from 5 to 7 and any Wednesday from 10 to noon. Stop on by. We'll have refreshments and snacks.
Oh, that's always helpful.
And maybe it won't be leftover Providence cake.
Yeah, it will not.
We will go buy some snacks just for this.
Oh, that's fun.
So good. Yeah, stop on by. Don't need to sign up. If you want to, you can, but just come on out and help and get on a list and we'll email you reminders and that kind of stuff. And
good.
You'll become an official volunteer, even if you just come once,
ooh,
which
I
means you
it.
Get invited to behind the scenes stuff.
Oh, fun.
So another little incentive. So, hey, something else I need to give a shout out for, and we probably should have him on the show sometime.
Okay.
Mr. Kane.
Yes.
Over at Astoria High School runs the, I don't know what the official term is, the fisheries department, the fishery
program.
Fishery program. Did you guys ever have any dealings with that? Because you were in the fishing business.
So, yes, my father-in-law, Norman Quila, helped Warrington High School start its fisheries program.
Okay.
So when they started their curriculum and then their program that's in the Skipanon, he was very involved.
Okay, because I do find that they engage like people like your families that are in this trade and industry.
It's great. Yeah, great for these local kids.
So, yeah, but Mr. Kane has just been an amazing guy, and selfishly, because my son has an interest in this. He took all the classes, and even before he did, Mr. Kane recognized that there was an interest there, and he fanned that flame. And, I mean, my kid just graduated from high school, but it looks like this is going to become his career of some kind. But they just came back from a trip, a two-week trip that was supposed to happen last year. It was going to go to the Amazon through Oxford University. So it's not an officially Astoria High School sponsored thing, but area students from Warrenton and from Astoria participated, like 10 or 12 of them. They were supposed to go to Peru and spend 2 weeks with real scientists doing all kinds of research.
Oh, fun.
But apparently Peru does not want any Americans in potential of COVID going.
I understand.
They put it off last year and then totally canceled this year that it was still not going to happen yet. So they pivoted and they went to Mexico.
Okay.
But they spent a week in the jungle.
Beautiful.
And then a
hot
week. Yeah. I asked Donovan when he got back. I said, how did the heat go? And he goes, it was miserable for the 2 days. Then I just got used to sweating all the time.
Oh.
And I was like, did you bring anything you wouldn't have brought now that you know? And he's like, I wouldn't have bothered with my blanket.
Oh.
He brought, like, instead of a sleeping bag, like a blanket and a sheet.
Yeah.
And he's like, I just slept in a hammock.
Yeah.
And then they spent a week on the coast at some little cove on the ocean that has like turtles of some kind. And they spent time doing research there and with all the fish in a coral reef. So, I mean, just kind of incredible that Mr. Kane organizes this thing and students, you know, it's 10th, 11th, 12th grade, and a couple that have moved on to college came back for this.
Oh,
and just
wonderful.
What an amazing experience to work with real scientists from around the world.
Oh, so good. Yeah. Especially when it was canceled. I mean, what a bummer to those kids.
Yeah, and there's no refunds.
Right.
Oh. Your refund is like 25%, or you can sell it to somebody else.
Right.
So, and the price went up actually a little bit from the Amazon River in Peru to Mexico. The price actually went up slightly.
Hmm.
Which perplexes me.
There's nothing you could do about it.
And unfortunately, I don't have any pictures because Donovan's phone got stolen, probably by a spider monkey.
I love that.
An overly friendly, fat spider monkey. It was like a pet that somebody had released and near the base camp that they were in the jungle.
Yeah.
And no spider monkey family or pack or whatever they're called would accept it.
Oh.
So it just kind of hangs around because it knows people.
Sure.
And you're not supposed to feed it, but apparently everybody there feeds it. So it like climbs up on people's laps and it's all cute and lets you pet it as long as you're giving it a French fry or something.
Sure. Until it takes your phone.
And then he thinks maybe because the thing stole, like just kept stealing stuff. So he thinks maybe that's where his phone went.
Wow. So we also know what his previous job was too.
Yeah. So we're hoping maybe the spider monkey will upload a selfie and all the other photos. But they had like Mayan cooks and they learned all about Mayan culture and climbed up a pyramid and all kinds of other things.
Oh, good.
So thank you, Mr. Kane. I don't know if you listen or not, but everybody should support that program because it's amazing.
Yeah, that's great. So,
okay, let's see. Oh, the other thing. I was gone in New Mexico.
Yeah.
And the reason was not a fun reason. My parents live there, but my father passed away about a month ago now. And I went to help my mother, and we were kind of cleaning out stuff, and she's trying to figure out, you know, what does the rest of her life look like. And it's a big house. They don't need it, but she's not ready to move or anything quite yet. But there's like a lifetime.
Yeah.
I mean, he was 92.
Wow.
A lifetime of stuff. So I went, each one of my brother and my sister have gone, and we're helping to clean up and clean out. And we're in my dad's office, home office, and we discovered that he had a hobby, a lifelong hobby that we really didn't know about. He liked to write angry letters to companies that he felt wronged by.
I love this.
And they kind of amused us. And my sister had been there the week before I was, and she started a box called Comedy Gold. And we were just all kind of laughing, and it was a good way to remember my dad as well. But it was kind of amusing to us. And I've shared some of these with my coworkers and other people, and they kind of laugh.
Yeah.
That this cranky old guy was writing these letters. So we thought just for laughs and maybe as a small, strange tribute to my father, we'd read a few of these.
Here we go.
And so the first one I've got is to General Mills. And it says, to whom it may concern, I'm about ready to switch from Wheaties, which I've been eating for 70 plus years, to something that fits on my spoon. See photo. And he's got a photo of a spoon and two giant flakes of Wheaties. Why on earth don't you make the flakes spoon size? Cordially, Donald A. Burns.
Another one went to Quiznos Subs. Very good restaurant, by the way. Manager, it's perhaps trivial, but your cashier ought to learn some math. A couple weeks ago, we thought we were taking advantage of your any small sub plus drink plus chips offer for $4. We had two coupons, so we expected to pay $8 plus tax. We added a cookie at $1.09 and expected to pay $9.09 plus tax. If the tax is about 6%, the total should have been between $9.09 plus 54 cents equals $9.63. So why were we charged $10.17? We argued with the cashier to no avail. When it appeared that we were drawing a crowd, I gave in and paid what he asked. We are unlikely to come back if this is the example of new math. Copy of sales slip is attached. Sorry.
I'm so embarrassed at all the people that were waiting. Like somebody was just like not giving him a dollar, saying, go away, old guy.
But he's correct, though.
He is correct. So not only Quiznos, but apparently McDonald's he had an issue with.
Yes,
and this is manager McDonald's in the town that they live in New Mexico. Dear sir, madam, you need to incorporate some quality control into your establishment. We've been purchasing salads quite frequently. Sometimes they're okay. Other times they're not so good. Which I want to say, then why do you keep going back? Today was the pits. Each salad was about half the size it usually is. This we discovered when we got home and were ready to eat. The attached photo tells it all. He liked attached photos.
Documents very well.
He was a scientist.
Yeah.
On more than one previous occasion, I'm sure the chicken came from a container that was used to hold the fat that was cut off the meat. Ew. How about a little attention to detail? And then there's a handwritten note, because he saves like the copy after he sends these. He has a handwritten note. Got telephone apology and two free salads.
Oh.
I'm like, again, why do you want the salad if you've been unhappy with it?
50% of the time. Here's another one to Omaha Steaks, a family favorite from my Midwestern family. I just got off the phone after an unsuccessful attempt to place an order, see attached PDF, when I discovered that my free shipping label, NE3105, wouldn't be accepted. I canceled the order. Look through your records and see what I've spent with your company over the past several years, for myself as well as gifts to others. Needless to say, I'm appalled that this is happening, and I thought you ought to know of it. Accordingly, I'll be reluctant to respond to any future mailings or email ads. Cordially.
Which explains why I haven't gotten Omaha Steaks from him in like 10 years. Because he used to send it all the time,
every
Christmas or my birthday or something.
One faulty ad or label.
Okay, and then the last one. This one goes way back. It's actually back when they lived in New York, to Cablevision Cable Services, where we got our cable from. Dear sir or madam, not one nickel until you resolve the interference problem. I've called until I'm blue in the face, and your technician has been here and seen the terrible pattern on my screen. Most evenings, we can't view what we want. Fix it, and money flows again. Hopefully, Donald A. Burns.
At least on that one, he kind of knows. He's the one that's hopeful.
I seem to recall in my youth that we switched companies at some point, and that his response was, come get your equipment. It'll be out in the yard.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like that was probably a couple of weeks after that letter went out, and they didn't respond the way he wanted to.
I can appreciate a well-documented complaint, because sometimes people just complain, right? With no follow-up or no...
Yeah.
And he's not, there's no ask in any of the, well, there are asks, but it's not ask for money. It's asks to
fix it.
Right.
Things he thinks were wrong in the world.
Rectify the wrong. Yes. I think that's a good thing.
So anyway.
We may bring a couple more back.
Thank you for the indulgence.
Yes.
Because we do have like 50 or 60 of these at this point, and it just kind of keeps going.
I love them.
And we barely have scratched the office of the surface of his office yet. So, okay. But somebody else passed away too that's important to this town.
Okay.
Richard Donner. The director of The Goonies
passed
away. He was 91.
Wow.
He was born on April 24th, 1930 in the Bronx in New York City. His name was not Richard Donner. It was Richard Donald Schwartzberg.
Oh.
I kind of like that.
Yeah.
He died July 5th. So some just little key things about him that I thought were fun and interesting. He often inserts lines. He directed Superman, Lethal Weapon, the Lethal Weapons, the very first Superman, which was the best of them all, and of course the Goonies. He often inserts lines of dialogue or places PSA posters and stickers for animal rights, human rights, and gun control into his movies.
Oh, Oh, I never.
So just like in the background or just things subtly that he puts in there.
I have to pay attention.
He kept both One-Eyed Willie's head and a model for the ship from the Goonies, the Inferno, are in his office, actually.
Yeah.
Aside from directing the film, he has an uncredited cameo as one of the sheriffs on the at the end of the as the Goonies exit the cave on the ship on the beach.
Oh, that's great.
He's one of the sheriffs that shows up.
Yeah.
And apparently he does that in all of his movies. He has some kind of like Alfred Hitchcock walkthrough that you can kind of see him.
How fun.
Let's see. Then, oh, after he rapped, because it was all with kids, and he apparently sometimes got very frustrated working with kids that were not necessarily professional actors. And the last 2 weeks, they were all very cold to him, and they didn't talk much. And he didn't quite know if they were just mad at him or not. But what he didn't know is that Spielberg had secretly planned to fly them all to Hawaii and sneak them into his house so that when he got home, they would all be there.
Oh.
And he didn't know that. And like a neighbor let Spielberg and all the kids in. So he thought, like, finally done with this movie. It's wrapped. I'm going to go relax for a couple of weeks in Hawaii. And he walks in and all the kids are there.
Oh, my gosh. Surprise.
And then kind of my favorite thing. He had a bust of Abraham Lincoln in his office. And he says, it's not because of the greatness he did for our country, but it's because that whenever I look at it, I have to remember an actor killed him.
There you go. Wow. So. Very unique man.
Yeah. And then the other thing, and I think the newspaper or somebody talked about it, Jeff Cohen, Chunk, had a lifelong friendship and still like went to a weekly lunch with him and Mel Brooks and a couple of other just icons of Hollywood. And I didn't really quite know the connection, but I saw an interview, I think in Variety magazine, that Chunk said that he knew when he wasn't going to be an actor after The Goonies, and he actually was hired as a production assistant later by Richard Donner. And when he decided he was going to go to college and become a lawyer, he asked Donner if he would write a letter of recommendation. And Donner said, well, sure, write some points down that I should say. And when he read everything that Jeff had written, I guess he didn't have a father in his life and he wouldn't have been able to afford college and he needed help. And that's why he needed this letter of recommendation. Donner called him and said, I'm not going to write you a letter of recommendation. And Jeff said, I was heartbroken. You know, why? What? He goes, my wife and I are just going to pay for your college.
Oh, my goodness.
And he said, you know, I was so stunned that this guy believed in me so much.
Yeah.
And that's probably why they were friends. To the end.
I love that.
Yeah, isn't that sweet?
Yes.
All right, shall we get on with Big Show? Because we're halfway through.
That's a good one, yeah.
Well, do you have anything to plug?
I don't.
Okay.
No.
All right, because I've been doing all the talking. We gotta mix it up here. So really quickly, the This Day in History highlights.
Yeah.
These are things that happen tomorrow.
Okay.
1692, five more people are hanged for witchcraft, 19 in all, in Salem, Massachusetts.
Dun, dun, dun.
You kind of like this story, don't you?
I do.
You mentioned some point that you kind of like the witchcraft story.
Well, I do. I think that, yes, women are often left out of history. But in this case, women are the central figure of it. But of course, you know, it's tragic. And it's women of strong morals and strong convictions that spoke loudly. And
That was often the case.
Yeah. And not that they were ever doing anything wrong by any means. But it does shortly document some of their history, even if it is tragic.
I was going to say, I almost would rather be anonymous in history than to be hanged
or
killed.
Well, sure. Yes.
But yes, your point is very well taken. Speaking of women, 1848, Seneca Falls Convention begins.
I had that one. That's a good one.
And I almost thought about making that the history highlight.
Yeah.
It was a very tough decision today. 1903, the first Tour de France.
Oh, that's fun.
1903. I kind of want to wish that they were like riding those big giant bikes with a big front wheel, but I know they weren't. Maurice Guérin wins. He's a Frenchman, of course. 1941, Tom and Jerry first appear under their own names in a cartoon called The Midnight Snack by William Hanna and Joseph Barber.
Nice.
1985, Krista McAuliffe is chosen as the first school teacher to fly aboard the space shuttle. And you know, they talked about somebody else first before they were going to go with a school teacher. They were going to go with Big Bird. And the actor in it said, no thanks. I really don't see how I could wear this suit and like pull this off.
Sounds awful.
And just thank goodness. I mean, it was bad enough to watch Krista McAuliffe die, but could you imagine all the children watching and Big Bird just blows
up?
Awful. That would have been like 10 times worse.
It would have, yes.
So, but our history highlight of the day, again, this was very tough between Seneca Falls, but 1799, the Rosetta Stone is found.
I saw this one too. Yeah, that is.
It was tough for me.
Yeah.
So, but history highlighted. Rosetta Stone. Suddenly we understand all this, these ancient languages.
Yeah. It's great. Those Did I miss good anything? Ones. No, that was a good one.
Okay, shall we get right into it then? Because yes. We mentioned.
So that's our segue.
Because we mentioned witches. So we thought we'd be helpful, both in explaining why they killed those 19 people in Salem.
Yes.
And, you know, in case people want to know, well, how do I know if I'm sitting next to a witch? No, not really, because these are all really stupid and bad, and we've evolved, thank goodness. But these are the bizarre and cruel ways that people tested for witches.
Yes.
So again, because I don't want anybody misunderstanding what I just said, don't try these.
No.
Don't try these at home, because we have evolved past this. We don't need to do these things. We don't want to do these things anymore. So the first thing was their victim's urine was baked into cakes and fed to dogs.
Ugh.
One way to identify a witch was to bake a cake with rye and the urine of a witch's victim and then feed the cake to a dog. There are differing accounts on how witch cake was used to identify witches. If the dog began to exhibit symptoms similar to that of the victim, often that indicated that witchcraft was at work. The dog would then identify the witch.
Oh my gosh.
That doesn't even make sense.
Awful. Another one. They were dunked into freezing water. A ducking stool was a medieval torture device that was primarily used to punish and humiliate women. The contraption resembled a seesaw with a chair affixed to one end. The device was placed along the edge of a river, and the offender, who would be strapped into the chair, was repeatedly plunged into the cold river water. Witch hunters would use the device to coerce confessions from the accused. This method was later simplified. Accusers forewent the device and just tossed suspected witches into the water to see if they would drown. Of course, it's not in this, but they often were bound, right,
yes,
when they were thrown in the water.
Yeah. Oh. And you know, by gosh.
That goes into the next one.
If you were drowned, then, oh, yes. Sorry, you weren't a witch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to keep going on that one?
Yeah. So the next was, is they were bound and thrown in. Probably the ultimate example of the no-win situation. Some accused witches had their hands and feet bound, and then they were thrown into the body of water. It was believed that if a person was a witch, the water would reject them and spit them back out. However, if they were innocent, they would drown. Okay. So, of course, the odds here, you know, statistically never worked into their favor.
Yeah. Did the water ever spit anybody out? Ever? Unless there's like a friendly dolphin underneath that kicks them out of the water.
Yes. Again, this goes into
wow.
Strong-willed women who were speaking words and saying things that the people around them that did not like.
And once again, why I'm glad I live when I live now.
And that you're a man.
You will, that too. I am very fortunate. All right. They were pressed with heavy stones. This method was used to manipulate accused witches into admitting their guilt. The witches in question had a board laid on top of them, and their accusers placed heavy rocks on the board until they either confessed or they were literally crushed. Giles Corey, one of the few men who was accused, met his end in this unfortunate manner.
Ugh. They were scratched by their victims until they bled. Some of the accused were tested by being scratched by their supposed victims. It was believed that those cursed by a witch would experience relief if they scratched the person responsible for their affliction. Victims would scratch the witch in question until they drew blood, and if their symptoms improved, they knew they'd found their witch.
You know, I don't know how many times I can just say, wow. Good gravy. They were told to pray, and it had to be perfect. Accused witches were asked to recite the Lord's Prayer and to recite it perfectly. This meant perfect pronunciation. No stuttering, no twitching, no shaking. Real witches were known to be unable to recite the prayer perfectly. That is, without skipping a word or stuttering. Even passing this test was not always sufficient to reach an acquittal, however. George Burroughs was executed in 1692 in Salem, Massachusetts, even after passing the Lord's Prayer test. You know, especially if you know your life is on the line.
Yeah.
I think that would cause you to stutter.
A little nervous, yeah. They were asked to touch their victims. Some victims were afflicted with violent fits that caused them to shake and convulse. To prove their innocence, some witches were asked to touch their victims. If the victims were brought out of their fit, then the accused was declared a witch. The reasoning behind this test was that the only the person who put the spell on the victim could remove it. This method is known to have been used exclusively in Andover, Massachusetts.
Their bodies were examined for a third nipple. Mm. Suspected witches were searched for a third nipple. It was believed that this third nipple was used to feed one of the witches' helpers or familiars. Mm. Witches were supposedly given this mark by Satan during their transformation.
Yeah, always an explanation for something. In addition to being searched for that third nipple, suspected witches were also examined for unusual markings. During witch hunts, moles, scars, and birthmarks were often believed to be the mark of the devil. It was believed that anyone who made a deal with the devil would bear his mark.
Who knew the mark of the devil was a third nipple?
Yeah.
They were pricked with pins and needles. It was believed that witches bore a special mark that identified them as a practitioner of witchcraft. Witch hunters would identify these marks and use a pin or a needle to prick at them. If the suspected witch felt no pain, he or she was declared a witch. Some witch hunters would dull one end of their tools so that the accused would not experience any pain.
They were forced to summon the devil. Known as charging or incantation, some of those on trial for witchcraft were forced to verbally summon the devil, supplicating him to stop possessing an individual who might be in the middle of a fit or seizure or some sort. In this test, the witch really couldn't win. If the fit stopped, then she was clearly in league with the devil and should be treated accordingly. If it kept going, then she wasn't doing good enough job summoning the devil.
They were weighed against a stack of Bibles. This test required that a suspected witch would be weighed against a stack of Bibles. If the accused weighed more than the Bibles, she was innocent. However, if she was lighter than the stack, she was deemed a witch and punished accordingly. Okay, how many?
Yeah.
And what size? Little pocket Bibles or big giant ones?
Yeah. They were observed to see if they muttered to themselves. This one is cruel and bizarre to the extent that it turns what was likely a form of mental illness into a telltale sign of a witch. If you could observe a potential witch talking to herself, muttering under her breath in some fashion, odds are she was probably a witch doing incantations or something else evil. So being ever vigilant for this manifestation of witchcraft was something any good citizen should be ready and willing to do. Sarah Good, one of the women slain during the Salem witch trials, was particularly famous for having a habit of talking to herself.
That's terrible. If they looked old and witch-like, that was enough to condemn them. For some unfortunate women, the only test they needed to pass for the public to declare them a witch was to be a bit older. According to John Gall, an English Puritan cleric during the height of the witch trials, every old woman with a wrinkled face, a furrowed brow, a hairy lip, a gobbler tooth, a squint eye, a squeaking voice, or a scolding tongue, a dog or cat by her side is not only suspected but pronounced for a witch.
And in every good fairy tale as well.
Yes.
Spectral evidence refers to testimony provided by a witness that states that the accused person's spectral shape appeared to the witness in a dream. This was an accepted form of accusation during the Salem witch trials. If a neighbor claimed a woman appeared to them in a dream with malicious intent, that was enough to condemn her for witchcraft.
Wow. That's just like so terrible.
Yes.
All the way around. And it really is. You know, stronger, independent women.
Yes.
That probably just speak their mind or speak to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, bam, you're
crucified for being, yes, themselves.
Yeah. That's terrible. Anything else we got?
No.
That was kind of fun.
Sweet dreams tonight, everyone.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, don't forget it. You can, like, help beautify the world by coming to the Flavel
yes.
House and help on the gardens.
And that, again, is Monday evening, 5 to 7, and Wednesday morning, 10 to noon.
There we go. Right. So go help plant some history. That's bad. Go make some history. Thanks for listening. We will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.